Balmy, beautiful weather is bringing us outdoors and to water recreation. Fun, sun, swimming, and boating. But beware, there are hazards. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Last week, a boating accident killed a man on the Cedar River. Over this past weekend, another man survived a close call on Clear Lake. Today, we talk water safety and, among other things, why it may be difficult to tell when someone is drowning. Before that, the newly crowned Miss Iowa, Nicole Kelly of Keokuk. Even though Kelly was born without a left forearm, she doesn't want her disability to define her. We'll also talk about reducing barriers to employment for the disabled. That's all coming up. First, this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. In our second half hour, I want to mention that we'll be talking about summer water hazards, that you may not be completely aware of involving water recreation. So I want to reach out at this point and ask if you've experienced a close call when swimming or boating. Tell us what happened and what you learned about it from water safety in our second half hour. You can post something on our Facebook right now or tweet us at IPR Talk or email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. That topic coming up in our second half hour of River to River. But first, it was early in her teens or to her mid-teens that my next guest, Keokuk native Nicole Kelly, decided she didn't need her left arm. It was prosthetic. She was born without a forearm and a hand. Now 23 years old, Kelly has just been crowned Miss Iowa 2013, and it's a crown she won a few days ago in only her second beauty pageant. Miss Iowa 2013, Nicole Kelly joins me now by phone. Hello, Nicole.
Hello there.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you on. Now, I have to admit I have some mixed feelings about introducing you by mentioning your left arm first and foremost, because I know you don't want that to define you, but it's also a reason that media is giving you a different sort of attention. And it does give us the opportunity to talk about challenges for people with disabilities. How would you like us to view your disability in the context of winning Miss Iowa?
It's true. You know, I keep kind of telling people it's every fiber of who I am and yet no part of who I am. It's something that I've grown up with, and every single day of my life, it's something that I talk about with people. So it, you know, doesn't upset me. It's not unusual. However, my mission in going to the Miss America stage is to prove that I'm not just there because I have one hand. You know, I'm coming to the stage because I earned my right to be there, because I'm passionate about my platform and have been working and, you know, volunteering my time, and because I am that well-rounded individual that they're looking for to be Miss Iowa and to be maybe Miss America.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think the message I really want to bring to the Miss America stage is, although I'm showing up with a disability, I am celebrating my difference, and I have all of the ability that all of the other girls have as well.
Now, do you want to further awareness about disabilities, though, with your prominence and your upcoming competition for Miss America?
Absolutely. I mean, I think this is the perfect opportunity to do so, but it definitely is a matter of spinning, maybe isn't the right word, but spinning the message in a very positive way and saying that, yes, we may look different doing things, but that ability is there. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Now, are you aware of any other state winners who have disabilities who will be in the Miss America contest with you?
I haven't heard any of that are going to be at the stage this year. However, there's still states that are doing their rounds. However, I can say that our Miss Iowa in 2000, Teresa Yucatel, was also born with only her left hand and went to the Miss America stage representing Iowa, just as I am, in the same state that I am. So I had the honor of actually just last week meeting up with her and getting to talk to her about what she did in her year and the organizations she got to work with and how it affected and changed her life. And it was a really, really neat experience to get to sit down with her.
Wow. What was the biggest takeaway for you as far going forward, since you both have something in common?
It's true. I think what I took away most from her is, yet again, almost nothing that has to do with having one hand. It's more or less the fact that this opportunity I've been given is just going to shape and affect the rest of my life. Just with the opportunities I've been given and the people I'm allowed to reach out to, they truly will be people that affect my life for the rest of my life and people I'll continue to keep in contact with, which was really cool to hear, you know, 13 years after her reign, I guess, of Miss Iowa, that she still has those contacts.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said, Nicole Kelly, that not having a left hand and forearm, it doesn't bother you to talk about it. What was there a time, have there been periods when, geez, stop talking about it, bugs me, I'm a person?
Yet again, yes and no. It's a part of me, and I welcome the questions, but at the same time, I reiterate that it's not who I am. It's a part of who I am, sure, but there's so much more to me and what I've done with my life mm-hmm. that it's not, you know, it'll be a part of the conversation, but it won't be the focus of all conversations.
Tell me about some of those other aspects of you want to bring out in September, I believe, in Atlantic mm-hmm. City, New Jersey.
Sure. Well, I graduated school last May, and so this past year has been really just one big adventure for me. I spent my summer working at the Santa Fe Opera and afterwards moved to New York City for an internship with a Broadway theater company, Manhattan Theater Club. And then around Christmas time, moved to Chicago to work on a show at the Goodman Theater there. And in between, did my first pageant and got then a job back in New York City with the Broadway company I was working with. Up until then, you know, I haven't stayed anywhere longer than 3 months the past year. It's kind of been a get up and move, a get up adventure. It's really been a year of reaching out and really discovering who I am and what I stand for and what I want and how I want to affect people in my life. So it's really just been an adventure.
If you just joined us, Miss Iowa 2013, Nicole Kelly is joining me for this half hour. She'll be competing for Miss America in Atlantic, New Jersey this coming September. What does getting ready for that competition involve, Nicole?
Well, already we've hit the ground running. Since we have 3 months, we're going back to Atlantic City this year for Miss America.
Are you still there, Nicole?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can.
Okay. The past 6 years, Miss America has been in Las Vegas, and this year they're moving it back to Atlantic City, which means that instead of being in January, Miss America is in September. So really the next 3 months of my life is very concentrated and very focused on getting ready for that. I now have a personal trainer, which is awesome and wonderful. I just got done working out with him before I called in to you. I'm going dress shopping for my fancy dresses in Florida this weekend, you know, and just really just getting ready. And we're touching bases with all of the platforms and organizations that I want to meet with and getting time set up to reach out and be able to talk to them. And, you know, just a really exciting rush of things.
Mm-hmm. Nicole, I want to have LaSheila Yates join us. LaSheila Yates, welcome. You're joining us by phone. Hi.
Yes, hi. How are you?
Very well. LaSheila, you are the chair of the Iowa Commission of Persons with Disabilities, appointed to that commission in 2010 by Governor Branstad. We want to talk a little bit about disabilities here, but I have to mention first and foremost a strange coincidence. You were crowned 2013 Mrs. Iowa International just a few weeks ago.
Yes, in March I was crowned Miss Iowa International. It's a pageant for married women, and it's also my first pageant. I never had an interest in pageants before, but it was part of my bucket list item. I said, well, you know, one day I'd like to be a beauty queen, and if I'm going to do it, it better be on a pageant with a platform-based model. So I chose the Mrs. International system because of it's platform-based, and, you know, my family and I, we've been working and doing a lot of outreach.
Mm-hmm. Well, congratulations on that, and I understand you are the first African-American Mrs. Iowa International. What are the criteria for that specific competition? What do they look at?
Well, first they look at your application. They look at your platform. They also want to see that, you know, you have a nice formal wear, which is the Mrs. International pageant is going to be in July. Also, in addition to that, they also want to make sure that your athletic attire, that you look well in your athletic. So both of those, that athletic as well as the formal gown, is 25% of your points. Each, and 50% is based on your platform. So they want to see that you're doing the pageant and going to continue to do outreach for a cause.
Now, LaSheila, as chair of the Iowa Commission of Persons with Disabilities, does giving attention to disabilities with high-profile people like Miss Iowa, Nicole Kelly, does that help, or how much does it help the cause for others with disabilities?
I believe that it helps significantly, and I'm definitely proud of Nicole and what she's done, especially for persons with disabilities, whether it's physical or mental. It shows them that there's someone that they can look up to that is, you know, proud and confident and is willing to, you know, do things and enjoy life regardless of, you know, what perceived limitations there are out there. So I definitely believe it's important for them to see good role models that portray persons with disabilities as being persons that are abled. A lot of times you hear that there are people, you know, with disabilities that can't, but that's not the reality. People with disabilities want to be contributors. They want to participate in the workforce. They want to participate in activities. So this creates other opportunities and additional role models to support that.
Mm-hmm. So tell us, when you work for the Iowa Commission of Persons with Disabilities, focusing on issues of employment, what do you see as the biggest issues disabled people face in the workplace today?
I would say the biggest issues just for employment and persons with disabilities is, access to facilities. There are a lot of facilities that are not equipped, that are not designed and constructed, and that's something that we're continuing to work on to give access to persons with disabilities. Also, you know, understanding what's a reasonable modification or a reasonable accommodation to ensure that persons with disabilities can perform their job and do those essential duties with or without an accommodation. One area I think that we don't pay much attention to is just that there are agencies that persons with disabilities, if they feel that they've been treated differently, can file a complaint at no charge, like the Iowa Civil Rights Commission, the Cedar Rapids Civil Rights Commission. And a lot of individuals, unfortunately, when they do file or choose not to because of fear of retaliation. And one thing I can say is, having worked for the local Civil Rights Commission, they do an excellent job of explaining the importance of not retaliating against persons with disabilities and that they won't experience it. And if they should experience retaliation, that, you know, that's something that's a protected act. So those are the things that I see. And also making sure that individuals with disabilities, I would say lastly, can effectively advocate for themselves. The Commission of Persons with Disabilities has a youth leadership forum to teach those individuals and provide them with skills that they need to self-advocate and to know how to make a request for an accommodation. Mm-hmm. So those are the things that I see just from my perspective.
I wonder if you say people with disabilities often don't file a complaint or hesitate in doing that because they fear retaliation if they do complain. What about simply the idea that many people with disabilities do not want to be viewed or treated as such, and so they don't want to call attention to that? Is that part of it, perhaps?
I would say in general, with all the protected class status, you find that sometimes people aren't willing to file a complaint. For example, Diversity Focus had a study recently that showed that there are a lot of individuals that felt that they were discriminated against, specifically in the area of public facilities, going to the stores. But yet, I don't know if that's reflective of the discrimination complaints that we have here locally in Cedar Rapids or even in Iowa City. So I think it's, you know, across the board is, you know, A, people don't know about it, or if they do, you know, sometimes there's a fear of retaliation. Mm-hmm. So I think that's across the board with all protected classes, race, disability, you know, persons with disabilities, as well as individuals because of their religion, creed, color, and so forth.
Nicole Kelly, let me go back to you. LaSheila mentioned perceptions, and I wondered for you as a person who is born without a left forearm and hand, how much of the disability is really our perception in the society, the way you are treated rather than the way you can operate
that
limits you?
Yes, no, so much. We're getting ready to start a campaign here, the Miss Iowa program, and it's kind of facing that issue of what are the limitations that society is putting on you, and the challenge is how are you breaking that? Because there are lots of perceptions and lots of questions, and that's all okay, and those are things I want to talk about, and I want to, you know, confront, and I think very much it is a situation where those perceptions are there because the difference maybe isn't fully understood. So if we can be an example of what a difference is and how we do things differently, then those perceptions will absolutely be knocked down, and that's what I'm striving for.
Mm-hmm. Do you have an example in the past when you were met with someone who perceived a disability and you had to really just be straightforward and say, this is not what you think it is, and don't treat me like that?
I mean, more or less it happens quite often in my life. Specific examples, I'm not sure I can come up with off the fly, but I mean, it's every day in my life when people see me, there's automatic perceptions. And many times I'll have people ask to help carry my bags or, you know, can I help you do this or that? And it's just as simple as saying, no, I'm okay, thank you. And then as they watch you do it, they see that, yes, it is okay and that I can indeed do it. And right there is breaking that perception.
You know, as a child, I imagine I'm just interested in how you were treated on the playground. You wore a prosthetic. At a certain point, you took that prosthetic off. But, of course, we know kids in elementary school or middle school can be pretty straightforward. Did you get a lot of questions, and how did you answer those?
Always. Yes, questions, but it's a situation, especially kids are the best, where they'll just ask straight up, and it'll be about 3 minutes of questions, and then it's as if nothing is different about you because they see you for who you are. They've asked their questions, and it's done with.
What questions?
So I was really lucky in growing up that my friends, you know, I was from a small town and everybody knew who I was, and those questions kind of came and went quickly, and it just was a non-issue.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I wonder, LaSheila Yates, when we talk about disabled, there is such a wide range of disabilities that fall under that category. Is that a problem in itself? You can have very seemingly minor things, minor limitations or minor disabilities, but all the way up to ones that require quite a bit of adjustment and accommodation.
I would say how we define disabilities is a condition that substantially limits one or more life activities. So if that person, you know, is self-defined if they have that condition, then I don't see it as being a problem. I see it as them trying to figure out ways to empower themselves to get the assistance that they need to be successful in the workplace or even within our world. And I definitely applaud Nicole because I've seen her pictures. She's a very beautiful person. And then just even listening to the way she speaks, she definitely speaks from the heart. So I think she's a very beautiful individual and a good example of, regardless of your level, if you have something that substantially limits and you're going to continue to strive to do the things, to be successful in whatever area, I applaud those individuals. So I don't think it's that you have to qualify for a disability. I think it's more or less if you have something that limits you, maybe it's, you know, having a something on an assistive device on your computer to help you better see. You know, those things, it's helpful to allow the person to fully participate. And that's what it's about. It's mm-hmm. reducing those barriers.
What about people with disabilities who need service animals? Can awareness be raised there as well?
Yes, and recently the Iowa Cedar Rapids Civil Rights Commission adopted an ordinance, Chapter 25, to define the difference between a service animal and support animal. And I know that they're doing a lot of outreach to landlords to better help them understand as housing providers what does that mean. So, I mean, I think there's always opportunities to learn and to provide information because, you know, laws, statutes are constantly changing. And it's, you know, only making the world a better place and providing more opportunities, as I will always say, for people to be full participants of this workforce, of the environment that they live in.
I want to finish up this conversation by having you talk a little bit about the upcoming continued competitions that you have. Now, LaSheila Yates, as the 2013 Mrs. Iowa International, you said that the is it Mrs. USA International, is that the proper term?
Mrs. International Pageant.
Mrs. International Pageant will be in July.
In Chicago.
What are you doing to prepare for that?
Well, I actually have a pageant coach, Cassie Willis. She works at Dartus Communications, so she's been helping me with the interview. My son, actually, he's a named Shaquille. He runs track for Jefferson, and my husband, he's really into sports. They've been helping me with fitness, and as far as with the interview process, my coach has been giving me questions, and as far as with my platform, I've done a lot since I've been crowned. I've specifically the language in the Iowa Governor's STEM Council, they had as a priority to engage highly abled individuals, youth in their STEM initiatives, and I worked with Dr. Jeff Well and their commission, their board, to actually remove highly able to replace it with high potentialed, because that highly able, I felt it had kind of a, it wasn't an affirming phrase. So in addition to that, I brought the first STEM festival to Cedar Rapids, Iowa. I work with the University of Iowa, Dr. Shatterman, as well as with the State Hygienic Laboratory. And totally, in totality, I've conducted over 8,000, I've made over 8,900 contacts with persons about STEM and engaging underserved represented populations. And that's been since January.
That's fabulous. Thank you very much for joining us, LaSheila Yates, Chair of the Iowa Commission of Persons with Disabilities, and good luck on the further competition in representing Iowa there.
Thank you very much.
And I want to reach out to Nicole Kelly, also joining us by phone, newly crowned Miss Iowa 2013, getting ready with your trainer. In any other ways do you get ready for the questions, the on-the-spot questions that you have to answer spontaneously? That would make me nervous as someone who gets to fire questions spontaneously at others. I don't like it turned around, actually.
The next 3 months we'll definitely be studying and making sure I'm up to date on all current events. However, to be honest, I think I'm more nervous to walk on stage in heels and a swimsuit.
Have you picked out that swimsuit yet?
No, and I think that's a situation where they provide it for you.
Okay. Well, good luck to you, Nicole Kelly, as well.
Thank
Miss
you
Iowa
so much.
2013. Thanks for joining us this half hour. Coming up in our second half hour, we're going to talk about the hazards of recreation and water. And perhaps you have an experience, a close call you can recall when you were swimming or boating. Tell us what happened, what you learned about it from about water safety. 1-866-780-9100. When we come back, Dr. Patty Quinlisk, the Iowa State Medical Director, with us. Also, Susan Stocker of the Iowa DNR in just a moment. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Wow, this balmy weather. Pretty nice, huh? It's bringing us outdoors and to some of us, to some favorite water recreation. Fun, sun, swimming, and boating. But beware, there are hazards. Last week, a boating accident killed a man on the Cedar River. And over this past weekend, maybe you heard, another man survived a close call on Clear Lake. So this hour, we want to talk about hazards having to do with the water, safety, boating safety as well. Perhaps you have experienced a close call in your lifetime when you were swimming or boating. Maybe you overestimated your abilities. Maybe you jumped in to save one. and tell us what happened and what you learned about it, learned from it about water safety. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, where you can post a message there. And tweet us is also a possibility. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Joining us, first of all, Susan Stocker is with us. Susan Stocker is a boating law administrator and education coordinator at the Iowa Department of Natural Resources in our Ames studio. Susan Stocker, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me.
I don't know what you can tell us. I know some of these are under investigation. What can you tell us about the fatality, the man killed on the Cedar River?
There were two individuals that were operating personal watercrafts, commonly known as jet skis, and one individual did run into the other, which unfortunately caused a fatality.
Mm. And the close call on Clear Lake over the weekend?
That was an individual that jumped from his boat in order to, I believe, assist a child and was not wearing a life jacket.
Mm-hmm. And I think was fully clothed, which is tough to swim any distance when you're fully clothed, have shoes or boots on, isn't it?
That is correct. The clothing can be used as a flotation if needed, but when you are swimming, it does hinder your ability.
Let's talk a little bit about boating specifically. In your experience, what practices pose the biggest hazards?
What we find is that most of our incidents or accidents occur because boats are traveling too close together. As of course we know, there aren't any road signs or road markings out on the water, and so individuals need to make sure that they're following the rules of the road for operating boats.
Okay. And also, we've talked about this on the program, that alcohol is a persistent problem on our waterways, isn't it?
It is in Iowa and all over the nation. 34% of the boating fatalities nationwide involve alcohol. And unfortunately, with Iowa back in last year, 2012, 70% of our fatalities involved alcohol.
Mm-hmm. And so we're well above the national average.
We are. We're almost double.
How do you account for that?
I believe it certainly has to do with our need to educate more and get the word across that boating and alcohol never mix, because individuals, I don't know that they understand that the wind, the sun, the glare off of the water also play an effect on the effects of alcohol, and almost double the feelings of the alcohol.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to play a little public service announcement. There are several on the website that we call Operation Dry Water, and this one having to do with that very topic, alcohol and boating. Let's listen in to this scene.
Hey, ladies. You and the Chia Pet having a good time in the no-fun zone?
Going really well, thanks. We're having a good time.
Awesome. Why don't you have an even better time? Get that canoe out on the water. Make some waves.
I don't know. I've already knocked back a few.
Come on, it's not like you're out there shark hunting. Yeah.
It does sound like fun.
I sail that barge down to Party Town. It's ladies' night. Maybe somebody will buy you girls an appletini.
Don't let your machismo ruin a safe day on the water. A tippy canoe can be a dangerous thing if you've been drinking.
Okay, so machismo is blamed there, Susan Stocker. Machismo, why not drink some alcohol, have a few beers, and then go out on your boat? Or also, I understand, with another problem of not wearing a life jacket. That has to do with machismo as well, doesn't it?
It does. And of course, here in Iowa and many states nationwide, anyone 12 and under is required to wear a life jacket by law. However, those are not the individuals that are dying and having, you know, close calls.
Mm-hmm. What is the current alcohol law?
Currently, the blood alcohol content for Iowa is 0.08, which is the same as operating a motor vehicle.
Mm-hmm. And that didn't used to be until, what, last year? It was, you could have more drinks on a boat, couldn't you, piloting it?
That was actually, the law went into effect in 2011. And so previously that the blood alcohol content was 0.10.
Okay. Going back to the life jackets, what is the law there?
The law for life jackets, besides the 12 and under kids who are required to wear them, an individual just needs to have them on board, a wearable life jacket for every person on board. And they have to have them readily accessible, so in an emergency situation, they'd be able to have access to them and put them on.
Susan Stocker is with us of the Iowa DNA. If you have an experience, a close call when swimming or boating that you'd like to tell us about, 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to Richard. Richard, where are you calling from?
Oh, hello, Ben. My name is Richard Lamb. I'm calling from Kelly, Iowa.
Well, welcome to our program. Did you have a close call you'd like to tell us about?
Oh, I've gone way past close calls, Ben, and had several close calls, too. I'm a real evangelist for personal flotation devices. I've seen people get out there like a main ocean where the water was really cold, and I had to help a guy back in, and he was just so hypothermic. I had just gotten in the water, so I was able to help there, but he got so cold he just couldn't function or get back. Mm-hmm. And then in rivers, I spent a lot of time on the Des Moines River, and you see a canoeist will tip, and they try to swim back to where they were and fight the current, and they get all tired out. And I would encourage people to just swim towards shore and don't fight the current a bit, because you're going to need all your energy just to get to shore.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Go ahead.
Oh, for wearing life jackets, let me stress that every boating accident is going to be a complete surprise. And then having a personal life jacket in the bottom of your boat or under the seat, if you have an overturn or a collision, you're not going to be able to get your damn life jacket on. And you can also, if you just wear it loose without being buckled up tight, if you go overboard at a speed, that life jacket can end up right around your head, pinning your arms up. And I almost drowned that way. Involved showing off in water skis. But,
okay. Richard.
Yeah, we're that tight.
Thank you for those insights. We want to move along. We've got a few others. Richard joining us from Kelly, thank you very much.
Yeah, and I can tell you about three family members that drowned in a surprise accident.
Your family members, Richard?
Yes, we were in Canada, and we had two boats, two people in one, three in another, and the boat with three people, they lost power and went downstream over a waterfall and drowned in a gigantic whirlpool that was on the English River in Ontario.
Oh, Richard, I'm very sorry about your loss.
Yeah, please wear your life jackets, folks. Thanks.
Thank you for the message, Richard calling from Kelly. Steve is in Des Moines. Hi, Steve.
Good afternoon. Susan mentioned the fact that we need more education, but really failed to mention the need to perhaps get more officials out there getting people off the water. I mean, is that something that we've got enough money to get more enforcement out there to really put the fear of God into people right, that are putting other people's lives at risk?
Right. I think that's a great point, Steve, because if you think about drinking and driving on our roads, you know, some people need the fear of God of being arrested to get them off the road when they've been drinking. Susan Stocker, do you feel those resources are adequate? Are people being checked who are boating, perhaps in a way that would indicate maybe they're not entirely sober?
We do have the resources available. We have 91 full-time conservation officers that are enforcing the laws on the waterways. And then during the summer month, we have additional 40 seasonal water patrol that are used as a enforcement multiplier out on the water. Mm-hmm. We could certainly use, individuals and assistance from the public, if they see someone who is operating in an unsafe manner.
How would you give a tip? Let's say I'm out on a beach or I'm on another craft and I see someone there. Most of us have cell phones. Would you be able to have a number handy so that you could alert the authorities to someone who was behaving in an unsafe way?
You can certainly contact your local conservation officer, and a list of all of the numbers are in the boating regulations that's mm-hmm. published by the DNR. Or you could also contact your local sheriff's department in order to relay that information.
Sure. Wherever the lake or river is, just go to the local law enforcement as you would for any other thing. Let's go to Greg in Waterloo. Thank you, Steve, in Des Moines, for that question. Greg in Waterloo, hi.
Hi there.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I would just like to say one year, this was many years ago now, but me and a bunch of high school buddies of mine took some canoes, and we were paddling up and down small river in our area in Waterloo. No life flotation devices in our boats were, and we came down. Which had three people in it, got along a log jam. And the one gentleman in the middle stood up and flipped the canoe over, causing us to go underneath the log jam along with the canoe. And, you know, it was a little, the water was high at the time, but it just, the emphasis on life, you know, flotation devices and those types of things are very, very, very important.
Right. Greg, I know you broke up a little bit on the cell phone, but I understand you got caught under a log jam there going down the river. A similar thing happened to me on the Upper Iowa not too many years ago. And absolutely right. These things, you'll come around a bend in a canoe or a kayak, and all of a sudden this situation presents itself, and you are in the water looking.
Right.
And it's not something you forget, is it, Greg?
No, it isn't.
No.
I fortunately popped up right in the middle of a log jam, but talk about scaring the life out of you. It was something I'll never forget.
Thank you, Greg, for passing that along so that others can learn to make sure you have a flotation device on, or better yet, be wearing that life jacket in those situations. I want to also include in our conversation before the hour ends, along with Susan Stocker of the Iowa DNR, Dr. Patty Quinlisk is with us in our Des Moines studio. Hi, Dr. Quinlisk.
Hi there.
The Iowa State Medical Director joining us once again. We wanted to talk to you briefly before the hour ends about recreational water illnesses. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we all like to swim in rivers or lakes. What do we need to be aware of? And how can we protect ourselves?
Well, the biggest thing that makes us sick if we're in water in a lake or a river, or even in the local neighborhood swimming pool, is unfortunately somebody's pooped in the water. And that sounds sort of gross, but it does happen. And we can get sick from that, especially if it's a child with diarrhea or something like that. But it's very simple to stop that. It's basically just make sure if you've got diarrhea or a child's got diarrhea, don't let them in the water. And if you have children, just make sure that every so often you have a potty break and have them go off and go to the bathroom so there's no way that they're going to go in the pool or the lake or the river, and that will keep everybody safe.
Mm-hmm. The chlorine does not protect us.
Chlorine protects us against a lot of the things, primarily the bacteria that may be causing somebody to be sick. But unfortunately, we can get sick with other things like Giardia, Cryptosporidium, and they just are not killed very easily by the chlorine in the water. So, again, the best thing to do is just to make sure that nobody with diarrhea is in the water, and that all of us, no matter whether we have diarrhea or we're perfectly healthy, rinse ourselves off before we go in the water. And that way, none of the germs that we're carrying will get in that water where somebody else is swimming.
Mm-hmm. Of course, in lakes and rivers, we have all kinds of wildlife. Doesn't their excrement pose a problem to us as humans, or doesn't that transfer?
Well, some of them can, but a lot of it doesn't transfer. A lot of the bacteria that, say, ducks and geese are going to carry are not necessarily the ones that are going to make us sick. Now, there's ones that, say, cows and deers can carry, can make us sick. But by far, the biggest risk to us is other human beings who are in that water and not going up on shore to the bathroom when they need to go.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know... It's fairly obvious in your lake or a river, you don't want to take a gulp of water, but sometimes that happens unintentionally. All of a sudden, you've got it in your mouth and you swallow it. How likely is that to make you sick?
Well, again, if people are staying out of the water when they have diarrhea and not having anybody go to the bathroom in the water, it's probably pretty safe. Mm-hmm. But again, if you get that one or two kids who are not being taken out of the water by their parents regularly or just don't know any better, unfortunately, it can make us sick. So again, just have everybody do what they should be doing, what right. they know they should be doing, should protect all of us.
Once you take that gulp, you swallow it, I suppose there's not much you can do to help protect yourself.
No, not really. Now, most of the time, you're not going to get sick, so don't let it stop you from going out there and enjoying the water. But we all just need to take some common sense precautions.
How do we find out what bodies of water, what waterways in Iowa may be a little bit hazardous for swimming or even for boating?
Well, maybe I'll let Susan take that because the DNR is the one who does the testing of the recreational
Let's
waters.
Go over to, yeah, Susan Stocker in Ames. Go ahead.
We have those areas posted on our DNR website on which ones have been, the waters have been tested and what the results are.
Okay, so if I want to be practical, if I go to a certain lake, let's say Clear Lake again and again, I could save that on my smartphone, bookmark it. And every time I want to go out, I just check that. How often does the DNR then check, say, the water quality in a Clear Lake or Sailorville Lake?
I'm apologize. That is not my expertise.
That's not your expertise. Okay,
no,
good.
It is
somebody
not.
Else at the DNR. I'm sure we can find that information at the DNR website, which is just look for Iowa, the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, and find that. Now, Susan, Operation Dry Water is something that you have going. It's a national program. Explain what that is and how your office has worked with this national program.
Operation Dry Water, as you said, is a national program, and it is an enhanced operation nationwide where enforcement will be out in order to educate the public on the dangers of drinking and operating a boat.
Mm-hmm. And back to the question that we had earlier concerning alcohol, I was very interested to hear that Iowa is far above the national average when we say, compare that, 34% of fatalities, boating fatalities, are connected with alcohol consumption. Whereas when we look in Iowa last year, what did you say, 70% of fatalities?
70%, yes, of our fatalities involved alcohol.
Mm-hmm. That would indicate that we're not doing something right in terms of awareness, wouldn't it? What can we do better?
What we can do is make sure that there is a responsible, sober driver, just like we have when operating a vehicle, that you don't go out and operate a boat when you've had alcohol. And so abstinence from the operator drinking.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that we need to have more campaigns to raise awareness in doing that? I'm just trying to figure out what other states are doing that maybe we could model ourselves after.
We could certainly and will continue to have campaigns. We are working with employee family resources who have connections with the driving schools and also educating the young people about operating a boat when there's alcohol involved and alcohol and a vehicle. Oh. So we can certainly always have more campaigns and educate our young people and all of them.
We're coming to the end of the hour with just time enough to mention this, perhaps a couple words from you, Susan Stocker. You, as your role as education coordinator, you coordinate some online safety courses along with the U.S. Coast Guard. So people can learn online about safety as well, can't they?
That is correct. On our website, we have three online vendors for our boating education courses. We also partner with the United States Coast Guard Auxiliary and the United States Power Squadron, who teach our education courses. So I would certainly encourage everyone to take a course so they can learn about the boating and being safe.
Susan Stocker of the Iowa DNR, thank you for being with us this hour.
Thank you for having me.
In our Ames studio, in our Des Moines studio, thanks to Dr. Patty Quinlisk, the Iowa State Medical Director. Thank you, Patty, for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And River to River is produced by Ben Stanton, Emily Woodbury, and Sarah Bowden. Technical support from Julie Englander today, and Ames help from Jason Burns, and in Des Moines, help from Sarah McCammon. Charity Nebbe just sat down next to me here in the studio. Hi, Charity.
Hello, Ben.
What's coming up tomorrow on Talk of Iowa?
Well, we're going to continue our look at the Farm Bill in a cooperative program with Harvest Public Media and KCUR in Kansas City. Tomorrow, we're going to take a close look at crop insurance and the Conservation Reserve Program. We're going to figure out what's at stake in this rewriting of the bill and who wins and who loses and what the interested parties are looking for.
Great. We'll look forward to that, Charity Nebbe. And Charity, you will be hosting. No, you were not the host today,
right,
but tomorrow you will
tomorrow
be the host.
I will
at
be.
10 o'clock. We'll look forward to that. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.